and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Eichton, and with me tonight is Leo San. Leo, how you doing?
I feel like the Titanic meme. It feels like it's been 84 years since the Wolves last played a basketball game, but in reality, it's really just been 5 days of rest and practice since your last game. But in the playoffs, where they play almost every other day, it feels like it's been a long time. And, you know, it's felt good, but I'm also ready to go. It feels like it's a perfect little, you can call it like an all-star break during the regular season, but during the playoffs for the Wolves to really have that time. And so it also comes at a great time as well, too. It's been busy personally with me, but also the Lynx season started as well, too, last week. And so although we are primarily a Timberwolves podcast, we do support the Lynx here a lot. And they had a great start to the season. They've gone 2-0 so far. They beat their season opener. They beat the Dallas Wings in their season opener, taking down Paige Beckers in her home debut. And then they traveled to Los Angeles, where unfortunately I couldn't make it to the game in person, but they did defeat their old nemesis in a pretty easy route. So they're 2-0. So it's been a basketball still abound.
Yeah, Minnesota basketball not really losing all that much lately. And even if you want to go to baseball, the Twins had won 13 in a row. So Hey. Yeah, Minnesota sports keeps on winning. The hockey team out here, the Minnesota Frost, I think are winning as well. So yeah, good times. It is weird to have like a 5 day break like this. Again, the Wolves have had two of them, but I know for me personally, it's like a really good like mental reset. Like when you go from like one series to another and really don't get to even like stop and think, that's really tough. And we'll talk about it later, but that's one thing the Wolves have going for them in this series. Like if this Thunder series goes seven, Thunder will have played 14 games in I think 29 days. Like that's just tough. And you saw it with Denver, just kind of happens to a lot of teams. Their health just kind of crumbled beneath them. Like I'm not sure Jamal Murray was healthy and Aaron Gordon somehow played with a great juice brain, and MPJ's got whatever shoulder thing he's got going on, and the Wolves, other than Dillingham's ankle, have been healthy pretty much the entire postseason, I guess, other than a 5 minute stretch with Ant's ankle too.
Yeah, right. I mean, I could never imagine going through a grueling 7-game series and having to play immediately afterwards. Oh, wait, yeah, we do. I mean, that literally happened to the Wolves last year. So we'll get into that series a little bit later. But yeah, I do think that 5 days is like, that's a good enough rest. And I think being able to go from the Lakers series out to the Warriors series and how slow they came out of the gates in game one against the Warriors, I think was, you know, all in all, I hate to sound cliche, but everything happens for a reason. And I think that's really good, because I would be very surprised if the Wolves came out with that same lackadaisical approach in game one after this long layoff. They've talked about it a lot, is that they need to stay sharp. They can't, you know, let the same thing that happened in the Golden State series happen this next series as well, too. But yeah, the Thunder, I mean, you know, they got to be, you know, maybe it wasn't an emotional 20-point fourth quarter comeback against the Nuggets, but I mean, they did kind of blaze through them pretty quickly there in the first half. But even so, it was still an emotional and draining series, so they had to do a lot of traveling, and they had to, you know, granted, OKC to Denver isn't that far, but still, it's a lot of back and forth, and it's time that they didn't get to rest.
Yeah, for sure, and we'll start with the Warriors series, kind of recapping that. I do think a lot of what that series ended up being will help them this series. Obviously, the minute Curry goes out, the whole series changes. The Wolves took care of business, don't really need to get into... We don't know what would have happened if Curry would have played. I think we are confident the Wolves would have won, but understanding of the Warriors, it just stinks for the Warriors fans, obviously. But like you mentioned, the long layoff, they're the same exact, it's a 6 day layoff, five full off days of practice time and time off. But basically the same exact layoff they had against coming off the Lakers series against the Warriors. And I agree, like if there was any, like not the right mental space for that game. I don't want to use effort for that game because I thought they were playing hard enough or whatever in game one. But yeah, whatever difference there is for that, I think they got that experience. And then just overall defensively, I think they were kind of taken aback by the level of physicality and maybe just quality of the Warriors defense compared to a Lakers team that just was not really guarding much of anything in that series. And then this Thunder team's obviously going to be a step up from that even. So yeah, I think the Warriors are going to have prepared them well for basically everything except for just playing a juggernaut of a team, basically.
Yeah. You know, I think as we think back to that Warriors series, there was just, still lessons in there. I think it's so easy for the casual fan to kind of write it off as like, oh, well, they just beat a team without their best player. You know, and that's all there is. He was like, no, there was a lot of lessons. I mean, the Warriors, you know, were still a good defensive team, you know, for the most part. You know, obviously not having Steph Curry matters because, you know, offense impacts defense, but still, you know, there's a lot to take away from it. And so, you know, before we move forward into the Thunder series, like you said, Ryan, let's kind of wrap up and tie things up in a bow with that Warrior series there. So the series ended last week and the Wolves advanced in five games. Who would have predicted? I would have predicted, but no. I do want to talk to you and ask you, Ryan, given the Warrior series, let's just say, you know, games 1 through 5 all the way till the end, who was your apex alpha for that specific series?
For me, it was Julius Randle. I know kind of the whole series. I was like, I've never been, and really the whole fan base has never been so happy to be wrong about a player. It took a while for Julius to kind of integrate into the team. Dante too, I think. It was just the timing of it was really tough. I don't know if the front office underestimated that, or if they made the trade knowing that that would be one of the downsides. But I think it just took them, like, it's one thing when you get traded at the deadline where you, like, you can just live out of a hotel for a couple months and then you'll figure out your life later. Or if you get traded, like, a couple months from now in July or something, you have a whole few months to get settled in your new city. This was like, they got no time. They can't just live out of a hotel for what has now been 9 months. Like, you just, that's not how it works. And so weirdly, both of those guys got hurt. And I think they both kind of used that injury time to, like, reset and get themselves rolling. Cause if you look at the Wolves, like, the whole season, they won 49 games. Like, they don't stand a chance against a 68 win team. But if you look at them basically post All-Star break, they do project as, like, a mid-50s win team that could, that upsetting a team with more wins wouldn't necessarily seem that strange. And Julius is a big part of that. It's just been Draymond said, I know you retweeted it. Draymond said in his spot, like, he got outplayed in that series, or he lost his matchup or whatever. And he pointed to, like, the only time he could think of off the top of his head that was true was the 19 finals where Siakam was really good in that series. I mean, maybe there's another one. I don't know. I think he's probably right. Like, those Warriors teams, he was a big part of, like, him winning those matchups. So, Julius was fantastic. I kind of think he was their best player. It's not worth, like, debating who was better, him or Ant, but certainly given expectations, he was their highest overperformer and really has been for since the start of March when he came back.
Yeah, I think that's the right pick there. I mean, he's certainly been the most consistent. I mean, you think about, you know, round one and round two, and, you know, there's been not many no-show games. I think there was, I think game two against the Lakers, they lost, or it's like we had a bad Randle game, but outside of that, I mean, like, he's,
you know. I believe that game was, he was the only one performing, and people were like, their offense was bad that game, and they blamed Julius because Julius had the ball. And for my point of view, it was like, Julius was the only one scoring. Like, I get that it wasn't in the prettiest way, but, like, ultimately, yeah. But keep going.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying, though, is that, like, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to go back because, I mean, usually bad Julius Randle games are so recognizable. You'd be like, oh, yeah, like, that was definitely a bad game. And there wasn't one specific game that, you know, I could put to, you know, pen to paper right now, like, yeah, that was a bad one. And so, yeah, I think his consistency and his ability to show up and, you know, again, handle Draymond Green in a way that Draymond Green, you know, personally says that he hasn't been handled in 5 years now or 6 years. It's pretty amazing. So I do love that candidate. For me, my apex alpha, though, Ryan, I'm going with Mike Conley, our 37-year-old Minnesota Mike. So, you know, props to Ant and especially Julius, like you all mentioned about being the best player in the Golden State series. But just when he thought it was over for Mike, how many times have we said that? It's like, I think this might be it for him. You know, just when he thought that he was completely washed, you know, Minnesota Mike has his two best games of the postseason to close out Golden State, where he scores double digits for the first time, you know, in both series. And that last game five, it was nothing short of amazing. He was four rebounds, two assists away from a triple double at age 37, which is pretty crazy. And so, again, I just love seeing that because, again, if we want to get to where we want to go, we know that Mike Conley is not going to be our starting point guard for maybe, you know, one, two, you know, seasons from now, but he is right now. We do need to use him. And again, he's doing what he can. I think he will continue to get hunted as he has the first two series, especially against, the Thunder, where they have, you know, some big personnel. Shea's really a handful to cover as well, too. But I mean, if he can hone in on from perimeter like he has been these last, especially that last game five, and help the Wolves from not turning the ball over, I think that is going to be really key for the Wolves. It's not turning the ball over against a team that leads the league in deflections and steal, you know, all those turnover stats. Mike Conley, as we know, I mean, he's the king, original king of that assist to turnover ratio, you know, at least in our generation. So yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be really important for us, especially in the series, if he could manage his way, control the ball on the offensive end, shoot the ball when he's open, and just continue to fight on defense.
Yeah, I do kind of like this matchup for him, the OKC matchup, because obviously, like, guys like Dort and Caruso are solid offensive players. They aren't like black holes out there, but I do think like those are solid enough those are matchups that you don't feel like I guess if you want to give Caruso the ball and Dort the ball and have them like go one-on-one against Mike, that's a win for the Wolves. Yeah, like there will be issues if like they'll attack him like you said and get Shea on him or get a different player like Jalen Williams on him or whatever. But I do think like this is one of the matchups where Mike can find a spot. I think Golden State was probably another good opportunity for that, both when Curry was playing and when Curry was out. Yeah, Mike's just an integral part of this team. I think everyone agrees he should be closer to like the mid 20s to high 20s minutes wise versus like the 30 plus minutes he was playing last year or 2 years ago. But I just think like you said, like the stories of Mike's demise have been greatly exaggerated. He's still a quality NBA player. Like you mentioned, we don't need to litigate whether he's the starting point guard next year or what next. Let next year be next year. We'll have time, hopefully, in a month or two to talk about that. But right now, Mike is just in a very important part of their team, and they're going to need him to continue playing well if they're going to beat OKC.
Yeah, Zach Lowe and I think it was Howard Beck said on their most recent show that they really want to give props to Chris Finch for pulling the right levers, as you know, we like to say around here, is that he gave Mike Conley the right amount of minutes on the nights he was going. He gave Rudy Gobert the right amount of minutes when he was going so far. And that's something that he's quite adjusted well this season. And I think if he continues to do that, if Mike is having a good game out there and he's standing his ground defensively, then yeah, Finch is going to roll with them maybe in the mid-20s or upper-20s. And that's great. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting because in order to beat the Thunder team, which we'll get to in a little bit, you got to have, you know, everybody in and contributing at the best that they can.
Yeah, I think just Finch, if I give another Apex Alpha here, I think Finch has done a fantastic job. I'm not going to say the entire season, but leading up to this moment. There's been specific things I think we've all have had issues with, especially earlier in the year. I do think that, like, I think it's fair to say, like, you can have a bad first half as a coach and have a good second half. Like, I think it's fair to say, obviously, if people were, like, wanting Finch fired, I just think you're kind of delusional. I don't think we were never, like, fire Finch. Like, I don't think anyone that covers the team day in and out was really, like, on that bandwagon. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I just think everything, like, that people, us fans, whoever have had like the biggest issue with him this season have worked out. Them starting Randall instead of Nas has worked out exactly how you'd want. Randall's their second best player. They've needed him. If Randall, like my thing would be like, if they need Nas like that, I just think they're not winning this OKC series. They need Randall to be like a number two scorer, a big guy. Obviously, like, we can talk about like the Nas Gobert part of it, but like, that's worked out. I think starting Mike has been solid enough. We can quibble about like, should Dante have started, but Dante hasn't been lighting up in this postseason either. So, limiting the rotation to eight guys, I think has paid off great for them in the postseason. I've seen people like want Terrence Shannon and Jalen Clark to play in this series. And other than like the spot minutes you saw kind of in the Lakers series for TJ, I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to roll with these eight guys. And as the NBA stands right now, I think that's like the best course of action. If you got eight guys, you're going to roll with them. OKC, I think, might play more like 10 guys or something. But I bet you when the going gets tough, they're going to get down to seven or eight. And the Wolves will do that too. I bet you the Wolves at times will be playing closer to seven. If Nikhil isn't playing well or Dante isn't playing well, they'll kind of make those guys closer to half a rotation spot or whatever they need to do. I just think if we're going to sit here and criticize Finch for all the things during the regular season that we didn't necessarily like or didn't pay off or whatever, I think it's important to like mention that like I think he's pulled almost every right lever in these two playoff series that they played.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell fans how to fan. Could criticize him all you want, but at the same time, it's one of those like I try to remind myself as much as possible. Maybe it's just me getting older and wanting to respect the elders a little bit more, where he knows a lot more about basketball than any one of us listeners probably will ever know about basketball. And that's not me just kind of writing him or anything like that. It's just the truth. I mean, this man is a professional NBA basketball coach who has coached around the world and in all different leagues. And so he knows what he's doing. So, you know, when people are like, oh, well, if I was coach, you know, playing Jalen Clark 20 minutes would have resolved all the problems, or playing Terrence Shannon, it's like, no, like that's just our impulse as fans to be like, oh, well, we want to see immediate actions. Where it's like, there's so much stuff we don't see behind the scenes, you know, in practice or, you know, film or whatever, that he's obviously, him and his team is breaking down. And so, you know, with that in mind, you know, he has done a great job. I think the entire team, especially in all this media availability that they've been having in practice, you know, this last week, they've all kind of said the same thing, is that, you know, Finch is not afraid to coach us hard. He's going to coach everyone the same. And I think, you know, that is really key, whether it's getting Randall in line, whether it's getting Ant in line, you know, whoever it is, he's done a great job. And so I think, yeah, definitely props to him. But, you know, on the flip side of it, there have some players that maybe didn't do so well in this last series. And so we'll move on to our prey of the week, that who did the Timberwolves make their prey and their foe. So I'll start with you, Ryan. Who is your prey of the Golden State Warriors series?
I'm just going to go straight forward and go Jimmy Butler. I was thinking, if I was a Warriors fan, I'd be a little bit frustrated with his play, especially given the amount of money they owe him for the next few years. And I just think that they needed him to play better. Once Curry went out, they needed him to be more forceful. I thought he didn't push the issue enough. And maybe all of this is like, that's just not the type of player he is at this point of his career. And that's fine. I don't necessarily like think it's unfair. Like I think it'd be fair to like give him that and not like totally crush him, because like that's just how the aging curve works. But if that's true, the Warriors are just not like title contenders. They're just not. Like if this is the Jimmy they're going to get, they'll be a solid team. They could win a playoff run like they did this year. That's all well and good, and that's better. It's a better track than they were heading down pre-Jimmy trade. But ultimately, my more likely thought is that he kind of poured everything into game three. And when that didn't go their way, I think I give up as strong, but like, I think he saw the writing on the wall. And for a guy that has been so big about always just, I just want to win. Like that didn't seem like winner talk to me. That didn't like, that seemed like kind of punting on the rest of the series. And maybe, I know he was sick. That's all well and good. But if you're out there, you're going to get, yeah, I mean, that just, it all sounds just like excuse making. And again, it's part of it is probably unfair. It's not like he went up there and made excuses for himself or whatever. Like they lost the series. I thought kind of listening to the Warriors, I thought they gave like fair, like, of course they were going to, of course they feel confident in their team with Curry. Like we would all say the same thing, but they were just like, that doesn't matter. We got outplayed. So, I'm really not like looking to like just go in and totally bash Jimmy Butler, but I do think like he should have been able to play better in this series, even realizing that like he wasn't brought in to be their number one scoring option.
But I'll give Brian all the credit, because he is a lot more professional than I am, and he is a lot more respectful than I am. I am not about respect when it comes to some of my enemies, and Jimmy Butler is one of those where, yes, multiple things can be true. Yes, maybe he was sick. Maybe he was still hurt. Maybe he didn't have Steph Curry, so he couldn't play the way he was used to playing. Maybe it's a little bit everything. But for this guy to always say that, like, hey, Jimmy's all about winning, he's always all about that, I'm going to have to push back on that, because when he requested a trade from the Timberwolves, it was not about winning. It was about the money. And so when he was on the Sixers and they were just, you know, one bounce away from a conference finals or whatever the case was, and they ended up ultimately paying Tobias Harris over him, what did Jimmy get mad about? He got mad that the Sixers paid Tobias Harris over him. He wasn't mad about the product. And why did he leave Miami? He didn't leave Miami because, oh, yeah, okay, well, I could have a chance to play with Steph Curry and win a ring. No, he left because the Miami Heat weren't going to pay him what he wanted to pay the same way that the Golden State Warriors did pay him. So I think for him, it's about the money. And again, I'm not saying he can't care about winning. I'm sure, yes, he's a professional athlete. Obviously, he cares. But I think he cares more about money and about himself, to be honest, because he is a dude that, like, you know, at this point in his age, like, he wants to secure the bag, and he got the bag. And look, yes, obviously, will he try to win a ring? Is he going to try when he's on the court? Yeah, of course he is. But I don't think that's the number one priority for Golden State Warriors. And is Jimmy going to get better next year? Is Draymond going to get better next year? Is Steph Curry? I mean, he might be the only guy that's probably going to get better between the three of them next year, even at his age right now. So, yeah, I mean, like, you know what? Like, I'm going to say it. Fuck Jimmy Butler. Go home, enjoy Cancun, enjoy time raising your kid right now. You know, played hard, but we'll see you next year. So,
yeah, I don't necessarily, I don't have much pushback for you on that, to be honest, but I know I'm salty about the, I'm still pissed that kind of the local fans and the national media bought into his practice thing immediately. It's been insane for me since it happened. I feel like I'm like Allen Iverson out here, like we're talking about practice,
right,
really.
Right.
It tainted people's view of Cat for years. And I mean, shout out Cat for making the Eastern Conference Finals before a specific Philadelphia 76er. That's what the other thing I was thinking about Jimmy is, like, there was a lot of bigs that he like ran away from. If, like, I don't know, Cat's kind of proven out to be a really good player. Like Cat, Jimmy, and like a Wiggs replacement, like that could have been a fantastic team. Certainly a healthy Embiid with Butler, they showed you, like you said, if Kawhi's epic jumper rims out like it probably should have, then he was fantastic down the stretch of that game. People go rewatch that game. Like, he was out. He hits the game time bucket right before that Kawhi basket. And I guess the Heat in like the Adebayo but the Heat were always a superstar away. Like, if they had Jimmy, could they have packaged Adebayo for Giannis? I don't know. Like, it, like you said, it's always been about, I don't know, the money, but certainly like the status. Like they're always paying people instead of me. And so, like, it's, he can say he's all about winning, but clearly there's other. I'm not gonna criticize someone for like trying to get his money, because that's what we're all trying to do. But like, you don't get to do that and then also be like, I'm all about winning, when it's about other things too, very clearly.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of besmirching and smearing some names, I'm going to move on to my prey of the week, Ryan, and it is none other than the one-time defensive player of the year, Draymond Green. And for all intents and purposes, Dre had to eat his words. I mean, he spent the better part of May 2024 going on TNT to, smear the name of Rudy Gobert. And he had to acknowledge in the post-game presser after they got eliminated that, you know, four-time defensive player of the year, Rudy Gobert, played well. You know, like that they have a four-time defensive mm-hmm. player of the year. I mean, you know that hurt. You know that hurt for him to have to say that out there. And so, again, I'll give him some credit that he did, you know, admit to that instead of just kind of biting down on his mouth guard and just kind of like, you know what, I'm going to just keep, you know, saying that he's overrated. But then, you know, you said this earlier too. He also had to begrudgingly admit on his own podcast that he lost his own matchup against Julius Randle. I mean, this is a Draymond Green. This is a guy who prioritized his own reputation over potentially having like a 6 year or more dynasty in the Golden State Warriors, in Golden State, when he chased off Kevin Durant because he didn't get along with KD and some of the decisions that happened. And look, like, I know that they've gone on air to say that, you know, Draymond's not the reason why KD left, but he definitely played a part. I mean, like, there's videos out there. There's a SB Nation secret base. They did a great Draymond Green versus Kevin Durant beef history type of thing. If you watch that, you know, you'd be surprised to hear how much Draymond's antics made KD want to leave. And so, you know, all that said, you know, Draymond, you know, he ate crow and, you know, he admitted to it. So yeah, like I said, props to him, but I am like 1,000% ready. If there's any type of bet that I could put out there, is that Draymond's going to go on TNT soon and go ahead and say that the Warriors or the Wolves don't have what it takes to beat the Thunder after the Wolves are down like a game, or they lose a game, or Rudy Gobert has bad games. Like, oh, Rudy Gobert's just absolutely like not coming up for his team. Like, you know, you can't be that four-time defensive player of the year and get played off the court. Like, he 100% is going to say something like that.
Yeah. And the biggest thing I thought was like, he said like what you should say or what is fair after the game on his podcast, like all that stuff. And it's just like, it makes like his antics on the court look even worse. Like, clearly he's a smart guy. Clearly he understands the game when he wants to, but he lets his emotions clearly get the best of him. And it's not like he always says the right thing. Like, the Rudy stuff is way over the top. The Cat stuff has obviously been proven to be just really dumb. But, like, he also clearly, like, isn't, like, I think he gets painted as an idiot, maybe. And certainly, like, I think one thing people were kind of hooked on to, like, the, when he said in the locker room, like, they're making me look like an angry black man, and be like, it's like, well, I think people need to remember the context of that, which was he was getting racial epithets yelled at him by a jackass fan right before that. So, like, maybe give him, I get it. Like, he wasn't being made to look like that. He was, like, that's just who Draymond is with the on-court stuff. But give him a break in the locker room after, like, with the racial thing specifically. Like, he was just yelled. So, like, and the whole Wolves organization, like, condemned that and then did a research and, like, Kerr thanked them. So, I don't know, just, like, which you didn't even bring it up, but, like, just give him a break for that specific phrase. Like, I think people, we don't need to make this, like, a, if you've seen the Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese discourse that just thinking that watching the links, like, and just tired of this type of discourse. Like, it's
right.
It was more fun when Clark was at Iowa and it was like an Iowa State, Iowa, just like fun rivalry. And now it's gotten to a whole new thing. But yeah, I think we can move on to the Oklahoma City series. I will say, being in the locker room after game 5 and being out in Denver for game 7 last year, I wrote a whole piece on it, but it was incredible how different, like, the reaction to each of those series wins was. Like, they were just elated, as they should have been after game 7. And it was like, after game 5 for the Warriors this year, it was like just business as usual. And some of that was like, they knew they had the series. You don't celebrate when you win a series, in large part because the other player got hurt. But still, they accomplished something big. And it was just like, we didn't do crap. Like, we got to get the job done next round. So I think that's a good sign as any. Maybe they'll, we hope not, but maybe they'll go belly up in this Western Finals again, and we'll all kind of be like, well, that was just talk. But we can move on to Howl or Foul. First one for that. Both teams have been top 2 in defensive rating in the playoffs, with Oklahoma City 1 and the Wolves 2. And during the regular season, both teams were in the top 6. Oklahoma City, if you remember from last year the Wolves had the top defensive rating and were like 7 points better than league average. And this year, Oklahoma City did the same thing. The caveat there is, last year the Wolves were 17th in offense. And I didn't check it before, but Oklahoma City is certainly top 5, and I believe top 3 in offense. So for Wolves fans that were like kind of trying to see how good Oklahoma City is, think about the Wolves. Like, I was thinking about this. If the Wolves last year had the 5th ranked offense, they win the title. I mean, their defense was that good, they wouldn't have won the title. So when you think about how good that team would have been with that, that's how you got to think about how good this Oklahoma City team. It doesn't mean they're infallible, but it's going to be a tall task. So we'll start with the defense. Oklahoma City, best defense in the league by a wide margin. The Wolves will struggle against that defense. Howl or Foul, Leo?
I'm going to go with Howl on this one. I do think that Wolves offense will struggle against the Thunder defense. And something that does live rent-free in my head is when you think back to one of the earlier matchups this year where Julius Randle was trying to back down Jalen Williams from, I think it was around the 3-point line, top of the key. And he just kept getting stripped and the ball just kept getting tipped over and over. And Jalen Williams infamously has a 7-foot wingspan and he's a great defender. I might be make an all defense team this year, to be honest, but he just kept poking it out until finally he got the steal, went full court. And then he got a dunk out of that. And that's tough because I keep thinking about that, because Julius has been able to bully a lot of the defenders, including, you know, excellent defender in Draymond Green in the last series. But for the most part, he's been attacking a lot of mismatches. And, you know, I think Jalen Williams is a guy that can get switched onto him, just because, again, the Thunder do have the personnel of the 2 bigs as well, too, to also try and throw at Julius. And so as we did give Julius his props that he was probably the most effective offensive weapon, or consistent effective offensive weapon, for the Wolves so far in this playoffs. And so with, you know, Jay Will or Lou Dort, or whoever Hartenstein is, you know, the primary defender on him, there's going to be Chet Holmgren probably roaming, or there'll be Hartenstein roaming. There'll be someone in the back line. And I do see that could get ugly. That said, you know, I think Julius has been playing really good team basketball. That if he does see that, you know, I have faith that he'll make the right play at this point in the season. So he's really going to have to trust his teammates and not fight right into the teeth of the OKC defense, because that's kind of what they want you to do. They want you to challenge them one-on-one because their whole team moves as a unit. So I do worry about that in terms of the Wolves offense, you know, struggling. I think, yeah, other than Utah, where the Utah game where Julius Randle got hurt, and then there was that one game against Milwaukee that Julius Randle played in, his worst scoring numbers this season was against OKC. I mean, it was just one game, but he mustered just 11 points. It was that game that I was just talking about where he got stripped by Jalen Williams. So, you know, I think if Julius Randle is limited, then I'm a little worried about how the rest of the Wolves offense is shaped down, because it's going to be a lot of responsibility on Ant. And Ant has proven that, you know, he does need a little bit of help where he can't just go hero ball every time. So I'm saying how I think they will struggle defensively.
Yeah, I'm going to go foul just on the word struggle. I do think that the Wolves have some offensive options. They're a much better three-point shooting team than the Thunder. So I think that'll be the Thunder give up a lot of corner threes. So that's something the Wolves can attack. Although, like, just sitting Jaden in the corner for threes isn't the best option. But if those are Mike and Dante and Nikhil and Nas, that's certainly a much better outcome there. I agree with you on the Randle thing. But I'm like kind of just reticent to like doubt his ability to figure it out, because he performed well against the Warriors, against Draymond, as good of a defender for Randle as anyone. I know the exact play you're talking about, and I always kind of bring up with that exact play is no one was moving. Everyone was still. And obviously if that happens again, yeah, they're going to strip Randle. And Randle's been a fairly turnover prone player this year. And that'll be the biggest thing about this series is just turnovers. If the Wolves don't turn the ball over, they're going to have a really good shot to win. And if they're turning the ball over 17, 18, 19 times, it's going to be an uphill battle. So yeah, I do agree, like, Julius Randle's a big hinge point where if they can get him going, get him good looks, and get him in that mode where he's spraying out to three, they're gonna be in good shape. And if he's posting up and like you said, J-Dub is poking balls away and Hartenstein is locking him down, then that leaves Ant left as the main offensive weapon, which obviously is great. But we always say, like, the two things that Ant struggles with, probably as anyone, is like an all defensive caliber wing stopper and rim protection, a big rim protector at the rim. Well, the Lakers didn't have either. The Warriors didn't. They weren't playing Gary Payton much, so they didn't really have either of those two things either. Well, the Thunder got both. They got Chet at the rim. Hartenstein's a fairly good defender. And they'll put Dort and Caruso on Ant pretty much the entire game. So it's going to be Randle's a big hinge point, but if Ant looks like he did last Western Conference Finals, the Wolves got no shot. And they might need him to go supernova in a bunch of these games to win the series.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to try to be as unbiased as possible in these takes. And I do have to shout out that, you know, between Hartenstein and Chet playing primarily that 4-5 and splitting, you know, all the 5 minutes, we're probably going to also see some J-Dub, the other Jalen Williams, as well, too. So shout out to my half-Asian brother. He's half Vietnamese, half Black. J-Lin, J-Dub. I am willing to bet he's going to draw at least probably 3 or 4 charges this series as well, too. He led, you know, college in NCAA in charges, and he's been huge. He's given Nikola Jokic some trouble, at least as much as you can give Jokic some trouble. So, again, they have just such a deep defensive team. And I think that's kind of where we're both getting to, is that there's just so many different looks and options that they could throw at Julius. There's so many options they could throw at Ant. So I really think it's going to have to be a total team effort to beat him.
Yeah. I agree. Let's switch over to the other side of the ball. Looking at the Wolves defense going up against the Thunder offense, one stat that stands out there that you put down here, Wolves are 4th in effective field goal percentage during the playoffs, Thunder are 9th. That's a big thing. The Thunder get a lot of their, similar to the Warriors, really, the Thunder get a lot of their value out of turnovers and scoring off of those turnovers. The field goal percentage they're not as concerned with. So like I said, forcing turnovers against the Thunder as well as limiting your own are going to be big. But kind of the flip side of the first question, the Thunder will struggle to score the ball, Leo. Howl or foul?
I'm also going howl on this one as well, too. So we alluded to it earlier, but remember when the Wolves were swept in the first round when the Wolves swept the first round, and then gave emotional, grueling seven-game second-round series, and then ran out of gas in the Western Conference Finals. I mean, I think OKC is about to find out. They swept the Grizzlies, and they had a grueling seven-game emotional. It's almost like a backwards series against the Nuggets that we did, where they really had an emotional game one loss, but they had an easy game seven win. But Minnesota's, I think, way better equipped to deal with Shea and the plethora of like perimeter players and talent they have than Denver was. I mean, Denver was, during the regular season, I mean, Denver was 10th out of 12 in defensive rating in the playoffs so far. Sorry, playoffs are 10th out of 12 teams in defensive rating. And then in the regular season, Denver was 21st out of 30 teams in defensive rating. So they've been a piss poor defensive team all series. So the fact that they pushed OKC to seven was because OKC struggled to score the ball outside of, you know, like you said, points off turnovers and fast break points. That's where they are top one, or if not top one, then top two in the playoffs so far. So I really think that this is going to be like a damn rock fight between these two teams. My prediction is that I think the winner is going to be whoever explodes for more threes. I mean, both OKC and Minnesota, they both shot just around 12.4, or made 12.4 threes per game so far in the playoffs. I think Minnesota has made 12.5. I think OKC averages 12.3 threes per game. But the OKC is shooting like a putrid 32% from the field and from three. So I think that's going to be really tough. Meanwhile, Minnesota, I mean, we do get a lot of our points, and we've been top one, if not top two, in the playoffs in second chance points and points in the paint. I mean, with Rudy Gobert putting them back, Julius Randle getting second chance points off offensive rebounds and bullying, and Jaden McDaniels, you know, crashing the offensive glass. So I think, you know, it's going to be really interesting because, you know, on one hand, we're going to be, you know, crashing boards, trying to score our second chance points while OKC trying to get out, you know, fast break off turnovers and things like that. So I think that's how the majority of it's going to happen. But in the half court, it could get a little ugly.
Yeah, I like what you said about the OKC path to this conference finals has been very similar to the Wolves path last year. They went from a sweep to the game seven victory over Denver just to get to the conference finals with home court advantage and a pretty sizable favorites and against a team that wasn't necessarily expected to get this far. And the Wolves last year lost, and they will have to try to like flip that script on their opponent this time. But as far as I'll go foul on them struggling to scoring, basically kind of the same idea. They just have a lot. Just they have the MVP. I mean, it seems like SGA is going to win. The Thunder have the MVP. They'll be able to get enough offense through him, like you said, limiting their 3-point success while also kind of, I think what is Jalen Williams going to bring them? He had an up and down Denver series, had some brutal games and had some solid games as well. That's kind of been their thing the whole year. I think you kind of know what you're going to get from Chet, from Hartenstein, from Jordan Crusoe, aside from three-point volatility. I think you'd stick Jaden on SGA and a bit of Nikhil too, because he showed, was that playing game a couple years ago, and Nikhil did a fantastic job on Shea. And you kind of play it as straight up as you can. Obviously, you never play it truly, truly straight up, and you try to limit what everyone else can do and go from there.
Do you think we'll see any Jalen Clark minutes? So, you know, for those of you that don't remember, I mean, he played particularly well against Shea, I think, in one matchup. But again, that's during the regular season. I think the Wolves are a little bit banged up at that time as well, too. But you say no.
No, I don't expect anyone outside of the Wolves top eight to play consistent minutes. I just don't. Like, that's been the thing. People have called for it. I plainly disagree. I think these are your top guys. When you get to the playoffs, you're going to play, especially your experienced guys. I think people underplay, like, the level of experience the Wolves have. And I just think you ride the horse that got you there. It's not if there's foul trouble or knock on wood and no injuries, but if that happens, then obviously that opens something up. But I think your top eight guys are too good to kind of fiddle around with people that haven't really been playing the entire playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I do agree with you. I mean, but watch game one. There's a blowout. I won't say who, but say there's a blowout fourth quarter. There's 8 minutes of garbage time, and we get 8 minutes of Jalen Clark. I'd be like, I told you, Ryan, we're going to get ourselves some Jalen Clark.
Well, now you're just acting in bad faith over there. all right, next holler foul. There are six All-Stars between these two teams, but I might come down to who's going to be the best player in the series between the, like I said, the likely MVP and hopeful MVP favorite next year or years to come, Anthony Edwards. So Howell or Fowler, Ant will be the best player in this series.
I'm going Howell for this one. And I'm saying this because how many times in this particular playoff run has it looked like Ant was just a little bit off during the first half of the playoff, during the first half of games, where it's like, you could be like, oh, maybe because, you know, LeBron rolled up on him, or who is it? Trayce Jackson-Davis landed on his ankle. So maybe he's a little bit hurt or something like that. But, and then in the second half, he just totally turns it on. He looks like a completely different player. I mean, that's happened a lot. And the truth is in the numbers. So far in the playoffs, in the 10 games that the Wolves have played, Ant has averaged 9.7 points on 36% shooting in the first half. In the second half, he nearly doubles the scoring up to 16.8 points in the second half on an incredible 51% shooting in the second half of the playoffs. And so I bring those numbers up because I believe that he's been trying to bide his time. Like that's a microcosm of him trying to bide his time for this playoffs, for the second half of the playoffs. Unlike what he did last season, we saw him just rocket, just come out firing against the Memphis Grizzlies in the very beginning, his first playoff series. We saw him just come out guns firing against the Nuggets at next year. Same thing against the Suns last year. He came out just absolutely just sandblasted the Suns last year. And so this season, we saw him really kind of take a more measured approach. Yeah, he had a 40-point game or a couple 30-point games here and there. But I think he's been saving himself for like, this is when I really got to turn it on. I'm not saying that, you know, he's going to average 40 points a game in this series, but I do think he's been saving his best for the second half of the playoffs. So in my opinion, I'm saying Howell, I think Ant will be the best player in this series.
Yeah, I think that's a good point that maybe there is some like energy saving going on. But I'm going to personally go Fowl. I'm going to default to Shea being the better player. I do think Ant has like a theoretical ceiling that is higher than SGA. But like SGA has had just a sensational season, and it's going to be hard for me to say like Ant's going to be able to outplay him. But I kind of do think that if the Wolves win the series, we're going to look at it and be like, well, Ant outplayed SGA, or at the very least, like Ant was just as good as SGA that entire series. I do think that that's going to probably need to happen if we look back and it's just like, yeah, SGA is the MVP. He was kind of very clearly the best player in that series. I think the Wolves might be in trouble under that scenario. Topic here. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, I was going to agree with you. It is hard to bet against SGA. I mean, this is a guy that I've had in, you know, my fantasy dynasty league for a while, and he's carried my team to 3 out of 4 championships. And so, you know, I'm very in tune with his development as a player. And, you know, he's been super consistent, right? And I think if the Wolves do have a path to beating the Thunder, it's breaking that consistency up. Is that throwing him into a little bit of a loop? We did see him get, you know, a little bit flustered here and there against the Nuggets. But again, as I mentioned, they were a terrible defensive team. And so hopefully the Wolves could do a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be fun. Whatever happens, yeah. I think it's going to be fun. Obviously, if the Wolves end up losing, that's not fun, but I think it's going to be an entertaining series. Last topic here. The Wolves are much more experienced. I was kind of thinking about the players that they have on the roster that have played for multiple playoff teams, because I think this is like really good experience where you get not only, obviously, you're playing more opponent team, but like you get a sense of what the playoffs are like in different rosters. So I counted this up. Players that have played for different teams in the playoffs. Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, Julius Randle, Dante DiVincenzo, and Nikhil, technically. He got into one garbage time game for the Jazz. But even not, he was on their roster. I think there's some value seniors there. And then the three guys left of the rotation, Ant, Naz, and Jaden are the three others who have both been kind of similar to OKC. Like they've been playing together for a long time. So in that sense, it's similar to OKC. But I just think, my Howell or Fowl is that the experience factor will matter in the series. And I'm going to go Howell. Like I just think that type of thing matters. OKC doesn't have a lot of experience. I guess SGA and Caruso fall into that category of playing for both teams. But it's for a lot of these guys, for almost their entire roster, Shea included, it is their first time playing in the conference finals. And with the Wolves, we saw what that meant. Ant and Jaden did not perform as well as they did earlier in the playoffs. Naz, too. They got tired. They had to go from Denver to back home. Like, all that. I just think that matters. Maybe it won't matter enough for the Wolves to win the series or whatever, but I do think that, like, the quote, Kat, what do you want us to do? Like, how much losing do you want us to do last year? It's a completely fair and acceptable answer for Kat. But also, like, there is a point, like, you have to gain this experience to, like, know what it's all about. It sounds cliche, but I just think it's true. It's not to say the Wolves, that experience is the end-all be-all. I just think it matters for, like, on paper, the Thunder are X amount better. I just think, like, the experience difference lowers that a good amount.
Yeah, I think after disagreeing with you on the first three topics, I'm agreeing with you on this one. I'm saying Howell as well, too. You know, you mentioned all those players on the Wolves side. I also did the same. I kind of crunched, or not crunched, but kind of sifted through the players on the OKC Thunder. And outside of their second round run last season, where, you know, the majority of the team has come back, that's Caruso, who had a championship run with the Lakers, Isaiah Hartenstein, who played in the Western Conference Finals for our Eastern Conference. Played with the Knicks. But Isaiah Joe, I think, played a couple games for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, those are the only in their rotation, though.
Right. So, I mean, those are the only three players. When, again, you look at the laundry list over on the Wolves side. And I do 100% agree with you, is that, you know, not only did, like, you know, this specific Minnesota group make it even further than their group last year, but we also have more vets, that you said, you know, on this team that have gone through more heartbreak, that know how to, you know, take this anger and the sadness and this motivation that they've kind of harnessed over the years. Like, I am someone that, I'm not going to trauma dump right now, but I've gone through a lot of trauma in my life. I've gone through a lot of hardship, and that has made me into a stronger person to who I am, where there's, like, not very many things that could throw me off. And that helps me in a lot of ways. My work, in my college work, I work with students and a lot of, you know, at-risk student populations. And because of the things I've gone through in my life, it does help me be able to help them and to be able to get them to where they need to go. And so I think, with the vets having that, I mean, Mike being 37 now, you know, all the team on the roster, his teammates have all said the same thing. They want to do it for Mike. And now you see Julius really kind of changing who he is as a player for this. I mean, they've seen so much. I mean, you can go up and down that roster. So I think the power of friendship matters. And I know that OKC is a team that does all their little post-game courtside interviews together and bundled up. But, you know, they're kind of teetering. I think there's a balance between that naive ignorance that you kind of want to have a little bit of, that you want to go in believing that, hey, we can win, who cares, versus like, hey, but, like, you know, we have experience and we know the pitfalls that we can run into. I think the Wolves have a better balance of that versus OKC, where you're just like, hey, we're just young and mathematically we're supposed to win, and, you know, we're gonna do it, right? So, you know, I 100% agree with you on that.
Yeah, and I think even a guy like Joe Ingles, who obviously won't play a big role on the court in this series, but just being in guys' ears. I've just kind of been surprised that OKC has not gone that route, because it's not an expensive role. Like, find a vet
Gordon Hayward last year, for that lasted like for 2 seconds, I think.
Yeah, but, like, better than that. find someone that, I don't know, that's been through it too, just to even have a voice in the locker room. I just think I've been surprised that they haven't gone that route. Ultimately, they're fairly big title favorites, so maybe that's the joke on me. All right, Leo, let's do predictions before we head into two words. Personally, for me, I'm going to go Thunder in seven. I picked the Wolves last round. I picked the Lakers the round before that. So I split that 1-1, obviously. I think the Thunder they're like -330 favorites, -370 favorites. I kind of think that's insane. I think that's way too high. That's like an implied probability of 75% for the Thunder. I would give the Thunder closer to like 60% chance to win. That'd kind of be my number. So if you're gambling out there, I would like I was thinking about, like, take the Wolves now, and when the series inevitably is close, then you can take the Thunder and kind of try to, like, find a middle there or something. I don't know. I'm not really a gambler, and even if I was, I have so much emotionally invested in the Wolves. I don't think I would want to
make a rational decision
financially double down. Sure. Yeah, I just think I do think the Thunder are better. If you told me, for whatever reason, I can't pick Thunder in seven, I'd probably go Thunder in six before Wolves in seven. But I think the Wolves have a very good chance to win this series. I don't think it's some sort of, like, it'll be some giant upset for me in my eyes, but it's hard not to pick the Thunder. But I'll leave it up to you. You've gone 10 for 10, basically. You've picked the game, not just, which I'm going to force you to do it again. You've picked not just the series game outcome rate. You picked each individual game along the way. You picked Lakers, Wolves game one, Lakers game two, and the Wolves win it from there. And then you pick the what you call the douchebag sweep against the Warriors, with the Warriors taking game one and then the Wolves sweeping out from there. I don't know how you knew Curry was going to get hurt. That was impressive. No, I'm just kidding. But what do you think, Leo? Prediction time.
Well, Ryan, my inbox has been flooded with sports bettors all over the world saying, Leo, please tell us, like, what do you see? And I was like, no, guys, like, you know, I'm not ready yet. Like, you can't rush perfection here. And yeah, I did go, like you said, you know, I went 10 for 10. I got, you know, those first two series right. And some of my friends at work were asking, well, what do you think's going to happen in this Thunder series? And I was like, you know, I got to talk to the underworld first. I'm going to be back. I'll tell you the day before. And when I went to the underworld and I saw some people selling some dark matter, I saw a lot of, you know, interesting things down there. And when I went to the person I go to, you know, let me look into your crystal ball, they said, Leo, you don't have to ask us what you think is going to happen in this series. You already told us. And they played back our playoff preview going into the Lakers series, where I predicted that the Wolves would beat the Lakers in five, but also predicted we would win the second round. And I said, I think that the Wolves are going to beat OKC in seven games and go to the finals. And so I'm going to stick with that same prediction that they told me to trust, is that the Wolves will win in seven games. Now, if I'm calling my shot, I will say that all of the home teams will win the first six games. The Wolves will go to OKC and win game seven. That is my prediction. And that's what's been told. And that's what's been written in the script. That said, if you bet on it, I am not liable. Two Words Wolves Pod is not liable for your wrong bets. We are not monetarily responsible for any damage that has been done to you. So
there you go. We'll see. Maybe you just want to fade Leo. I don't know. You can do that too. Certainly not. We're not even condoning gambling itself, to be honest, but yeah, that's the old, what's interesting, the Twins two World Series win, those World Series, the home game, the home team won all seven games, and the Twins had home field advantage in both of those series. So that would be kind of a nice touch to me if they went 6-for-6 home field. I will say, if that does happen, game three is going to be an interesting one, down 2-0, and certainly a game six down 3-2 would be a kind of a deja vu to last year. But yeah, I like it. It's not a bad pick. I think if I ranked all the like outcomes, I would personally go like Thunder in seven, Thunder in six, Wolves in seven, Wolves in six, Thunder in five. Like, that'd be my order. So I'm not that far away from your prediction. But I do find the home court interesting. I don't know if you saw, like, the Thunder on their website aren't allowing people outside of Oklahoma and like the surrounding states. Basically, Minnesotans are trying to buy tickets and they can't. So that's interesting. I don't think that would really work here, but I guess good for them. Yeah, it's gonna be nuts. I want the Wolves Knicks finals. Like, that's
right.
My dream.
That's right. That's that'd
be insane with the cat of it all. But
I think there's no better way for Wolves fans to get it, right? I mean, it's either their team or the guy that literally was sacrificing everything for his team, you know, the last, you know, decade, exactly a decade. Actually, I posted this on the Wolves social media today. It was that literally 10 days ago. So Ryan and I are recording today, Tuesday night, at 5, was it May 19th, that literally 10 years ago was when Flip Saunders and company won the number one pick in the 2015 draft lottery. And, you know, you saw Flip going crazy with Milt Newton and everyone in the room. And then they went on to pick Cat. And then Cat, obviously, you know, had a great career with the Wolves before he got traded for Julius Randle. And again, you know, Flip Saunders, unfortunately, did pass away just right before the season started. And so, you know, how fitting would it be if it was Cat and the Wolves in the finals, just kind of for all of it?
Yeah, and for me personally, like, I think you can go listen back to our Cat trade pod if people want to do that. But I think kind of getting over that has been, like, watching Randall succeed and Dante play solid, I think has helped that. And watching the Knicks now make the conference finals, like, both teams, I think, have made a positive trade for themselves. I don't really care who, quote-unquote, won the trade. I guess if either team wins the title, you automatically win the trade. I always say that, but... yeah, good for Cat, honestly, as a Cat stan. It's been nice to see. I will say, watching people kind of complain about the officials in regards to Cat, I just, it makes me chuckle. It's like, first time? You're the first time you've done, like, we did this for 9 years with this man. It's just, I don't know what, I don't know what the official's thing is with Cat, but it's always been kind of flabbergasting. Nick Stanton's enjoying the full, I think they've gotten the full, it's just been a season. They've gotten the full Karl Anthony Towns experience. So good for them.
Yeah, I will say, like, you know, him winning would also be great. I mean, would kind of fall, I don't know if it's a Minnesota Nice that's kind of rubbing off on me here, but that, like, you know, it's maybe not to the same degree, but, you know, when you saw KG win one with the Celtics, I mean, I know I was, like, rooting for the Celtics just because of, you know, the whole KG of it all that year, and it was brought a tear to my eye, you know, watching him win and shout out Minnesota. And then, you know, you get to see Kevin Love win with the Cavs, and again, maybe, you know, obviously to a lesser extent, but it was great to see him, you know, be able to take down the Warriors. Yeah, and you saw, you know, I think Corey Brewer, he won one with the Dallas Mavericks way back. Now, but then, of course, you know, Andrew Wiggins winning one with the Warriors. I was less, you know, emotional about that. But again, seeing Cat being able to win, I know usually it's like, oh man, we trade these guys away and they win. But it's like, you know, this is a guy that I think, you know, everyone or pretty much everyone in Minnesota is rooting for.
Yeah, I agree. I think locally the feeling would more be along the lines of like always a bridesmaid, never a bride type of feeling. But personally, I don't really. I would be more happy for Cat. He got a lot of validation last playoff run, and certainly if they win the, they you may even make the finals, but certainly if they win the championship, he'll get even more of that. All right. Our two words here, I'm going to start my two words, another chance. It's obviously another chance to try to make the finals after coming up short last year, but I just think when they traded Cat, the front office made it clear, like, their belief is like, just keep getting bites at the apple, keep putting together successful seasons. Eventually things will break right for you. Or at least you're maximizing your chance of that happening. And this is just another example of that. If they've given themselves another bite at the apple, they're halfway to a title again, like they were last year. And that's like the bigger picture. They're set up fairly well financially now. And just keep getting those bites at the apple, keep putting together successful teams. And the hope is that, like everyone's hoping for, that things break right for you. And hopefully that'll be this year. But if it's not, they'll retool and have another chance at it next year again. So, yeah, just that's been my thoughts. Is everything they envisioned about the Cat trade, the Randall trade, has kind of come true. They put together another team that could theoretically win the title.
Yeah, I like the another chance one. Something that I saw was, there's this guy, you know, I think he covers, I don't know what publication, maybe ESPN that he's on. His name's Kirk Goldsberry. He puts up a lot of really fun little, you can call them infographics or just little charts, graphics, things like that.
I believe Goldsberry is at The Ringer.
At The Ringer, yeah. And so he put up this one recently of saying, it was right after the Nuggets got eliminated. And he said that, like, it was a graph of, like, basically from the start of the ABA, NBA, or CBA, whatever, all the way till now, the list of all the champions by decades. And then he's talking about, like, you know, this year, I mean, we're going to get that parity we've always wanted, is to be another new champ. And I sent it to Kyle Tighe, you know, over there at with Dave Moore podcast and everything else that he's on. And I sent it to him. I said, man, I got kind of a little emotional looking at that, thinking, like, what if the little Wolves icon is the next one that's up after the Boston one? Like, what if 2025 is that one year the Minnesota Timberwolves won a championship, like, ever? And in our lifetime, we're about to witness that. Because how many people have, you know, gone their lifetime, you know, not seeing their favorite sports team win a sports franchise and or a championship? And I think for us, like, seeing that, I was just like, man, like, yeah, this is, we actually have another bite of the apple. And, you know, again, there's so many teams that don't even make it to the Final Four, you know, let alone, you know, make it, you know, to the finals even. So again, we have that chance now. So I do like your two words on that. I'm going to say, Ryan, for my two words is I'm selfish. I know I'm kind of cheating. I'm using a contraction there, but I'm going to shout out that same video of Flip and them, the front office winning the 2015 lottery, where he kept saying, like, give me one more. He kept saying, I'm selfish. I want, give me one more. And that's exactly the energy that I'm bringing to our Wolves community as well, too. It's like, dude, I'm selfish, man. Like, at this point, I think the Wolves, you know, quote unquote, weren't supposed to beat the Lakers. And then after that was quote unquote, well, they were never supposed to make it to the conference finals anyways. So like, but now, like in the eternal words of Flip Saunders, I'm selfish. Like, give me Wolves in seven. I think that, you know, no one's picking us for this one. And again, the Wolves play well as an underdog. And there's no reason why they can't. You know, they're playing against a better team, but they've beaten better teams, you know, in the past and current this season. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Let's be selfish. We'll see how it plays out. I'm excited for game one Tuesday night. We finally get some normal start times. I think games 1 through 6 are 7:30 Central, and then game 7 is 7 Central. So we get back to not staying up past midnight. I can get home at a reasonable time, unlike these last series. Maybe it'll mean some extra content for everyone out there. Andrew and I can kind of stay later at these games when we're not halfway to 2 a.m. or whatever. But yeah, it's going to be a fun series. I think I don't expect it to be. I'd be surprised if it was a 5-game series or 4-game series either way. I think it's at least 6 games. And that'll be good. You get at least 3 home games more at Target Center. And really, hopefully the Wolves can take down the series and make their first finals ever. But we'll start with game one. We'll see how it plays out. And yeah, we'll go from there. Leo, anything else?
No, everyone, just enjoy the ride while you're here. We never know how long it lasts, especially as Wolves fans, we know. So just enjoy the time. That's all I'm going to say. And tune in for our content for the rest of this, hopefully the next month or so.
Yep. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back later in the series.
Get home, drive safe.
Go Wolves.
Ayoo!